Greetings, dear listeners, and welcome to Real Skiers with Jackson Hogan. In today's podcast, I want to talk to you about the most important step in deciding which new skis are right for you, which is the first step, picking the right category. Let's take a look at the big picture, see if there's some way to simplify this process. First of all, what are the seven alpine ski categories, how are they determined, and what do they include and not include? The seven alpine ski categories are determined by their waist width, as this is the best indicator of behavior. We need some kind of concrete foundation, other than just how you feel the skis, in order to bundle skis together so we're comparing, by and large, apples to apples when we make comparisons within a category. Starting with the widest skis, which are powder skis, which in our criteria are over 113 millimeters underfoot, which is huge. It may sound big because it is big. And powder skis are aptly named. That's what they're meant for. That's the only condition that they're meant for. So by their very nature, they are limited in how many skiers want them or need them. And they are almost, without exception, going to be a second or even third pair of skis, which minimizes their impact upon the global ski market. Everybody has a powder ski because everyone has an elite athlete in their stable that needs one in order to be on film. But not many other people live in the same type of alpine environment as the heli-skiing film star. So there's not that many consumers who really need a powder ski in their quiver. But moving on, let's look at Big Mountain, which is grouped with 101 millimeters up to 113 millimeters, where we tip over into the powder category. Big Mountain are wider than the average bear. They're wider than the great bulk of skis that we call all mountain skis. But they're narrower than powder skis. That should tell you something about where they fit in the overall picture. They're going to be more popular than powder skis, more likely to be chosen as a second pair of skis, but still unlikely to be a first pair of skis for most skiers who classify themselves as recreational as opposed to competitive in nature. And I might as well mention now that there are a couple of categories of skis that aren't on this spectrum. And those include, as I'm thinking about it now, the athletes who are on twin-tip skis or pipe and park skis, the acrobatic sect. That group of skiers needs special criteria. They're not really on the same spectrum because they're looking for such different behaviors. How many of you, dear listeners, are trying to find a ski in which you can comfortably land backwards? Not that many of you, I'm guessing. And therefore, again, there are these genres that don't quite fit into the spectrum, even though you could say, well, it's got a certain waist width that would make it a big mountain ski. And I said, yes, but there are other criteria about that ski, which mean it's going to be used more for acrobatics and less for simply pointing them downhill. Also excluded from the alpine skiing pantheon are the alpine touring skis, or backcountry skis, as they're now most commonly characterized, that are made to go uphill as much as they're made to go downhill. And again, the criterion for that particular skier and the type of other equipment that they're using in terms of boots and bindings are so different from recreational alpine categories that they really can't be jumbled in and judged comparably with the rest of the alpine world. So that's why pipe and park skis and backcountry skis are excluded from this lineup. So returning to our spectrum, we were on big mountain skis. It's likely to be a second pair of skis. It's only going to be a first pair of skis for someone in the West who is also strong and young and charging through soft snow, which again doesn't describe a huge spectrum of the ski population, but it's out there and they are extremely well served with the big mountain category, where in fact we saw the most product renewal across all the seven categories incurred in the big mountain group this year. So it's obviously still an important category. Then we have two all-mountain genres. And again, we're descending in waist width here. So we have all-mountain west, which is wider at 101 down to 95. And then we have the segment called all-mountain east, which starts at going down at 94 and goes down to 85 millimeters underfoot. We give both of these categories the all-mountain designation because they're both going to be used everywhere on whatever mountain you're on. But if your mountain is more characterized by what we see in the eastern United States, narrower trails, shorter runs, more commonly making shorter turns, you're going to be on a different ski, more than likely, than someone whose everyday mountain is a much bigger, longer vertical, more wide open spaces, and, God willing, more new snow to have to deal with on a regular basis. So the All Mountain West group is wider, the All Mountain East group is a little narrower. We split them in two because the manufacturing world splits them in two. They're going to have a different ski in each of these columns if you're looking at these things on a graph, because they are behaviorally different, and that's why it's important to separate them. But they still both use the term All Mountain because they have a lot of things in common. They have to be versatile. No matter what mountain you're on, they're going to have to be good on hard snow and soft snow and on trail and off trail. That's what the All Mountain idea is all about. The next category, down in waist width, and we'll start to look up from the bottom this time. So we'll say that the front side category is 75 millimeters on the low end and goes up to 84 millimeters on the high end. Front side, again, is a perfect descriptor for it. These are going to be on the groomer runs that are on the front side of most mountains. They are always going to be tilled. Yes, you can always find new snow elsewhere, but front side is groomed terrain, and that's where these skis are designed to excel. A lot of these skis are made specifically for a dual-track carving style that's not particularly in vogue in this country, but is very important in Central Europe. And that type of a carving ski in this waist width is still a very valid tool for the recreational skier who quite realistically says, I'm not going off trail, and if it does happen, I'll probably be okay for a few turns, but I'm going to go back on trail as soon as I can. That's a legitimate reason to get a ski. And this is the most declined category. By that I mean you're going to have some star products at the very high end, which are going to be $900 skis because they're almost always going to include a binding. So that's pretty pricey, right? But the front side category has to take care of everybody on the groomed run. And if you've ever been on a groomed run, you'll know that there's all sorts of different skier levels out there all mixed together. And those people, when they're facing a ski rack, do not buy the same skis. The very high end, that $900 ski, is going to attract a skilled skier who has the knowledge of how to make this ski go left and right by tilting it and pressuring it. But you have the person at the other end of the skill spectrum who doesn't know which end is up, and he's also, or she, is also buying a front side ski. But it's going to be probably narrower than the wider ones. The ones that are closer to 84 are probably going to be the elite. The ones that are down closer to 75, this is not a rule, by the way, but they may be aimed for a less skilled skier. By the price, you shall know. If the ski is only $499 or $599 and includes a binding, it's for a low-skill skier. Or for maybe a lighter weight skier, maybe a tweener, someone who is 14, 15 years old, something like that, and not particularly built out yet. That might make it a good use for that lighter weight, lower aptitude front side ski, if you will. But most of the category is in the high end and is very rich. By that, I mean the constructions are very strong. The skis are extremely solid at speed, because if you're very good and you're on groomed runs, you're cooking. You are, generally speaking, motoring down the mountain. And you need a really good high-technology ski to do that really well. So some of the very best technology in skiing are made for the front-side skier. So it shouldn't be overlooked for those skiers who are specifically aware that that's where they spend most of their time skiing. Now, the next two categories are less visible in the U.S. market. The next one down is almost invisible, what we call technical skis. These have waist widths between 67 millimeters and 74 millimeters and are usually extremely rich in construction, borrowing a lot from the race room that's right next door, as a matter of fact. You might consider technical to be the link between the non-FIS race world and the recreational world, which in a sense they are. They are the very top of the front side category. Since I've sort of lopped off the front side category at 84 millimeters to 75 millimeters, that means that you're going to have some really high-end skis, which are just a little bit narrower, that are in fact going to be the head of the family, the rest of which you find inside the front side category. And this is especially true for women's technical skis. All the best women front side skis are in fact in the technical genre, and a lot of the women's front side skis are very much declined models in the women's category, which is why we don't necessarily steer a lot of women into the front side genre, because it's not a very well populated by very strong constructions. And we try to push women, by and large, up into the all-mountain east genre simply because they are much better skis and more versatile skis. Then finally, at the end of our product spectrum, our narrowest end of the product spectrum, we find non-FIS race. These skis are all narrower than any recreational category, but more importantly, they're not meant for recreational skiing. They are race skis. The non-FIS race category is in a way the least racy, so that mere citizens who don't train 300 days a year can get on them and steer them and have a great time. And I think non-FIS race skis are the best skis made. If you could only get one pair of skis and you were a really good skier, boy, get a race ski. They are so fabulous. They are so much fun. But as a point of fact, unless you are racing, they're probably not the first ski you're going to grab out of your ski lock. That's much more likely to be at the other end of the width spectrum. Non-FIS race skis are somewhat relatable to most recreational skiers, but in general, race skis are not relatable to recreational skiers. Racers aren't just using race skis. They have race boots. They have race bindings. Their entire kit is different, and they are much, much, much more fit than the average skier. It is ridiculous how much a racer has to train to be part of the race community. Trust me, the alpine recreational ski world and the alpine race world have never been farther apart. Now, let's go back to our big matrix and see if we can't now figure out where we belong. If you guessed all mountain, you're correct. We call them all mountain skis because they're meant to go everywhere. Well, that's the wish of most skiers. They'd like to be able to go everywhere. At least I don't want a ski that'll hold them back or prevent them from going everywhere. And manufacturers are onto this too. They're putting their very best technology into the All Mountain East and All Mountain West skis. That's where you're going to find their outside of racing, which they concentrate on all the time, they're going to spend their next best effort at hitting a home run in these critical All Mountain East, which is critical for both genders, men and women, and the All Mountain West category, which is for a bigger skier, simply because a wider ski puts a more vulnerable, narrower knee at risk. And therefore, I would rather, not knowing any more detail about you than your gender, put woman on an All Mountain East ski and men on an All Mountain West ski. What do you gain by width, after all? The one thing you gain is flotation and powder. That is the only thing that you gain. No powder, no need for width. Minimal amount of powder, no need for a lot of width. There are legitimate reasons for being on an all-mountain east ski, even if you think you might encounter some powder, rather than all-mountain west ski if, in fact, 90% of the time you're on hard snow. If 90% of the time you're on hard snow and you want a more versatile tool than what's available in the front side category, then you want an all-mountain east model. If you could only pick one category and you didn't want to learn about seven categories, you only wanted to learn about one, the one you should learn about is all-mountain east. So at this time, I'm going to stop riffing and start reciting because I want to read to you what I've said about the all-mountain east genre in my preface to that category on realskiers.com. This preface includes global information about the category in general and goes into deeper detail and specifics on the 2023 incarnation of the all-mountain east category. The east modifier is meant to imply that this narrower collection of all-mountain skis, 85 millimeters to 94 millimeters underfoot, is a match for skiers who go on groomed trails most of the time, but want the freedom to foray into the untamed backside of the mountain when conditions merit. The cream of this crop have settled on a waist width between 88 and 94 millimeters underfoot, creating a very versatile profile that qualifies for the quote-unquote all-mountain moniker. Some brands differentiate their 88 from their 98 model by making the former in a less burly construction that will slip into a slightly lower price point. They make excellent, quote, re-entry skis for consumers who have been out of the ski market for several years. Bear in mind that only a decade ago, a ski 90 millimeters underfoot, such as the Salomon Pocket Rocket, was presumed to be a pure powder ski. This collection has no such pretensions in a market inundated by an avalanche of skis over 2 centimeters wider, and therefore inherently that much more buoyant. But if an 88mm board could float just fine in boot top powder in 2003, it can manage the feat in 2023. And the best of today's crowded field don't care what the snow condition is. Digging deeper into this genre's makeup, it's divided along behavioral lines into two bundles: the friendly, easygoing rides versus the high-performance Type A personalities. The former are accessible to almost any skill level, and as such are great transition skis for those caught in intermediate limbo. At this width, they are easy to balance on, yet retain most of the properties of technical skis, so they can still cut a precise arc when so instructed. The latter, high-energy bunch, either require elite skills or are best appreciated by those who know how to occasionally achieve a high edge angle and/or drive a directional ski over 40 miles an hour. Now let's take a deeper look at the particulars of the 2023 All Mountain East field. The All Mountain East family is a polyglot lot that can be divided into two camps: wide carvers that sit atop a family of frontside models, and narrow off-piece models, which have come to dominate the genre. Every sort of snow connection imaginable is on display, from fully cambered to double rockered. Despite the wide range of design diversity, All Mountain East models purport to solve the same problem: creating an all-terrain tool that is equally happy off-piste or on. Think of the All Mountain East field as the compromise category, not quite as precise as frontside skis on hard snow, nor as surfy as big mountain models in powder, but built to perform ably in either circumstance. None of the diverse 2023 field, which were 24 unisex models that were examined by our test panel, none of these diverse field strikes the perfect 50-50 balance between hard and soft snow performance, as each retains a slight bias, depending on the traits of the larger family of models to which it belongs. Because off-trail baselines earn higher marks for forgiveness than for steering accuracy, the AME genre is lopsided in favor of finesse skis. Of the 7 new models debuting this season, 6 are finesse skis, and the 7th, the revamped Vocal Kendo 88, owns the second highest finesse score in addition to being the top-ranked power ski in the genre. Any skier beyond entry-level ability should consider adopting an AME model as his or her one-ski quiver. There are a great many forgiving models in this field, ideal for masking the technical foibles of weekend warriors. There are also a slew of powerhouses that should appeal to advanced and expert skiers with a full skill set. No matter where you fall along the power/finesse divide, you'll find your match in a category with more flavors than Baskin-Robbins. Befitting the age of incrementalism, which I've written about several times recently, 3 out of the top 4 finesse models this year and our top 2 power skis are updates to existing models. Some of the modifications were mild. Blizzard just shaved down the Brahma 88 core profile a tad to make it a bit softer and more playful feeling, and Head poured a coat of urethane over its core collection, which made the already excellent Core 93 even smoother. Making more substantial upgrades were Vocal's top-rated Kendo 88, which added tailored titanal frame and tailored carbon tips to its litany of technical touches. Solomon's QST, formerly a price point ski with a new core construction that elevates it nearly to the top of the finesse rankings, and K2's revised Mindbender 89Ti, with a new shape to the titanal Y-beam that provides substantially more support than the 2022 version. The two brands that made the most extensive line changes for the 2023 season are Rossignol and Fisher. Both the Rossi Sender 94 Ti and Fisher Ranger 90 are the narrowest members of brand new off-piste model families. Both likewise occupy a lower rung on the price hierarchy than their bigger brothers, and concomitantly target a skier transitioning to expert ability. As we've mentioned every year since its introduction, the Vocal Kendo 88 deserves special mention for resetting the performance bar for its generation. Every technology has a width, baseline, and flex that optimize its benefits. Vocal's innovative titanal frame and 3D side cut found their sweet spot in the Kendo 88. This category is all about handling mixed conditions. While one could argue that any of our top power picks might be its match in this regard, none of the other contenders can claim to be its better. If you're one of the many lapsed skiers who are returning to the sport after a long layoff, The All Mountain East genre is probably the best place to shop for a ski that embodies the best of current technology without feeling weird or unnatural to an old-school skier returning to the skiing fold. So, what have we learned in this episode? First, skiers appear to have an enormous amount of choice, enough to create buyer paralysis in anyone. Secondly, on closer inspection, if you're shopping for a single pair of skis to handle all of your skiing needs, you belong in an All Mountain East model. Manufacturers put their best foot forward in this genre, so whatever model you choose is likely to be good. This advice holds especially true for women, who will find the most choice in this genre. And finally, if you can't figure it out by yourself, don't worry, you're not alone. If you become a RealSkiers.com member, only $24.95 for new subscribers and $19.95 for my returning fans, you get direct access to me. Tell me a little about yourself on our consulting link and I'll steer you to safe harbor. It's your best insurance against making a $1,000 mistake, which is about what any decent ski is going to set you back. I hope you'll tune in next Tuesday for the next installment of Real Skiers with Jackson Hogan. Thanks for listening.